I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Wait, are you gaming? On a Chromebook?
Yep. It's got a high-res 120Hz display, plus this killer RGB keyboard, and I can access thousands of games anytime, anywhere.
Stop playing.
What?
Get out of here.
Huh?
Yeah, I want you to stop playing and get out of here so I can game on that Chromebook.
Got it.
Go ahead, break it down, really. Discover the ultimate cloud gaming machine, a new kind of Chromebook.
You want to play Berserk? You're on.
Hey, where are you going?
The video arcade!
You can't play Berserk at home.
Now you can.
Atari!
It's Berserk inside an electric maze, where robots shoot with electric rays.
Take that, Turkey!
So look out, don't get trapped, or you might get zapped. Berserk is here from Atari.
Can you beat that?
And only for systems from Atari.
Have you played Atari today?
Everybody, welcome back to the retro show called Play Retro. I'm your host, Scott Johnson, and I've never felt more alerted to intruders than I am today.
Oh, and I am your other host, Brian Dunaway, and I think these robots know about the quarters in my pocket, and it's kind of freaking me out, man. Kind of freaking me out.
They want to eat every metal piece of money you might have in your pocket.
Yeah.
It's a token.
You know what? I love that. Yeah. I love that commercial, by the way, at the top of the show, the Atari commercial. I love grandma. She like hops up like the grandpa from Willy Wonka when he found out I was getting to go to the chocolate factory. He's like, let's go to the arcade.
Oh, hell yeah.
Let's go.
Not only that, she was she just couldn't believe you could just play this at home on your Atari. She was shocked by it.
Right.
So her and,
shocking.
Her and Junior
grandma.
Having a little bit of a grandson grandma day, you know, playing Berserk, which is the most insane thing I've ever heard. Although back in the day, in the other room, okay, I'll start the story by saying this. In the other room, I have a cocktail sit down, totally busted, doesn't work version of Moon Cresta. If you remember the arcade game Moon Cresta, it was basically Nichon Butsu, whatever the name was. That was their answer to like Galaga or Galaxian, kind of a, you know, top-down space shootery, shoot the bugs in this in space deal. And had, you know, two-player would flip screens, you'd be on one side or the other, all that. And it's okay, it's fine. It's fine as a game. It's not the greatest thing in the world, but it's all right. And it has this like docking sequence that's kind of fun and stuff that made it a little bit different. Anyway, my grandmother would sit and play that for hours and hours and hours. And she was in her, I don't know, 70s, 80s when she was playing that. And she'd love that freaking thing. And so maybe it's not so crazy that old grandma might want to, you know, pop in the old Berserk cartridge and let it rip, you know?
I thought grandmas liked to play, like, the gambling games. Mm-hmm. I always thought grandmas were gamblers. But really, probably the truth is most arcade games before electronic arcade games were probably a lot of them were either pinball or one of those gambling type games, right?
Yeah. It's like, it's all they have in Japan now. They got nothing but those pachinko machines.
Yeah, there's a lot of pachinko machines there. Like, I've never been able to get into that. Maybe we'll have to talk about that one day on Play Retro and deal with the addiction that is.
Yeah, I'd do that. Hey, did I ever, did you know that, I forgot what I was going to say. No, I forgot. Oh, I know what I was going to say. the version, well, okay, this may be obvious, but we're going to talk about Berserk today because obviously we played the commercial or whatever, and we're going to get to all that in a second. But I did want to throw out a couple of things early on in the show that may or may not be interesting to some people. I know one guy in the chat could care less, but the rest of you are going to probably really be into this. All right. So I went on a bit of a controller hunt. What I'm trying to do is narrow down for my kind of general setup for capturing old games, doing emulation, all this sort of stuff. I want to try to get a few more authentic experiences kind of happening across that experience. And right. So a lot of you are out there familiar with the brand 8-Bit Do. They make nothing but controllers. They specialize in super retro stuff that connects to various devices. I have an older one over here somewhere that works with the Super NES Classic, and it uses a little dongle to wirelessly connect to that thing. But it's basically just a, you know, it looks like a this one, although this has a wire.
It looks like this one. So yeah, it looks just like it. Yeah,
this is what I use for my model that I drew.
You haven't seen Scott's artwork, by the way, if you're listening to Play Retro and you don't know anything else that we do, Scott Johnson is a cartoonist artist, and he has a brilliant piece of artwork recently that he did of repairing or maybe cleaning up a controller.
Giant SNES controller out in the middle of the grass. Who knows why it's there, but
right.
I got in a mood the other night and threw that together. But anyway, the point is, none of that's the point. What is the point? The point is, I decided to grab a couple of these, and here's what I did. First one, because I've been really getting into the Genesis back catalog stuff, and that was my kind of console du jour at the time anyway. I loved my Genesis. I was a huge fan. Bought all that Sega stuff, all the way up to the 32X. I had a CDX. I had all that crap. And anyway, I used to really, really like their six-button controller, so I got one of these. A little six-button Sega controller.
Wait, let me see that. What does that look like? Does it look like... What is that?
I don't know. Is it the same as yours?
Does it look like this?
I don't know. Let's see what you got. Oh, you got the same one as I do. Hold on. Brian's got the same one. So these are wireless, USB-C charged. They can also work wired if you want to use them that way. And been great so far. And it's just a more authentic experience for everything from Genesis to Saturn. What was the other one that kind of? Oh, 3DO right. also had. It had three buttons, but right. you know, same kind of layout. So ABC sort of thing.
Almost all the games I love my six button controller, because when you do need six buttons, it's very important to have them. But most of the Genesis games I play are just the three button.
Oh yeah,
it just seems like that was where I lived for some reason.
Well,
I don't know.
I don't think that's that unusual. It's a little bit like PlayStation 1. They had their initial controller. There wasn't even called the DualShock yet. It was just their controller, right. and the controller was fine and worked with games. But then Nintendo comes out with the N64 controller with this crazy analog stick, and Sony goes, oh, we could do that. And they do the DualShock 1, which had the two thumbsticks added. Now that sounds right. great and all, but very, very few games actually supported it. And why is that? Because if you don't have something that packed in with the damn thing, you're going to have less people making games for it. It's like anything. Think of, Xbox. What was the freaking voice movement thing? I forgot already. What was that called?
The Kinect. And it was, and I love the Kinect. You can poop it off. You can just poop on it if you want to.
I will poop on it. I'll poop on it and then wipe with it. Yeah, I don't like it.
And you know what? And then Bill Gates will see it because he was watching you the whole time.
He was watching the entire time. And he sees your naked outline. He doesn't see the detail, but he knows that you look like naked. But anyway, the Kinect is the same thing. Those weren't pack-ins. They weren't part of the device. And as a result, less development. Okay? So same thing happens with controllers. I think that's what happened in the case of... Sega.
Button.
Yeah, they put out the six button controller mostly to be an answer to the fighting game thing that was happening over on the SNES, and they wanted to compete with that. So they did that, and it did work with Street Fighter II Turbo. It worked with Eternal Champions. Like, it had its games, but not nearly enough used all six buttons. In fact, most of them, you're lucky if you use four of those six buttons. So
right.
Anyway,
by the way, listener, we don't receive any of these from 8-Bit Do. This is nothing. This is what we
this
do.
Is not
we
a promotion.
Like it.
Yeah.
No promotion. Us. No one sent us anything. This is just our opinions. And I like mine. But actually, there's three versions of the M30 that we're talking about, the Sega controller. And if you want this to work with your Sega Genesis Mini, you'll have to get a different version that's not the Bluetooth, because I got the Bluetooth one, but it does plug in through a USB-C type connection.
Yeah.
It didn't work with the Genesis Mini, but that's okay because I'm emulating on my computer, which works just fine.
Just as fine, So you want to be careful when you're buying it. Yeah, read the descriptions, I'll tell you. So then I pick up this one. the 8-bit do. What's this one called? The SN30 Pro. All right.
That one's their big one, I think. That's the big seller, right? That's the one they usually
push the most. Now, this one basically has the layout and feel of a Super NES controller. In terms of D button, select, start, and your action buttons are all in that same layout. It has shoulder buttons, but it also has bumper and trigger, which your SNES did not have. And of course, it has two analog sticks on there, and they both click in. So this thing is usable kind of across the board. If you want to use this on a PC, you could, and play brand new modern controller based games if you wanted, or whatever. But I got it mainly for the Nintendo stuff, and I always really like it when a game will let me use that analog stick for something. Right. I played a little bit of Robotron today that way, so we'll talk about that in a little bit.
Oh, so yeah, Robotron, a dual stick shooter. Mm-hmm. That one I had the most trouble this past week trying to get set up with my controls.
Yeah, Robotron's a pain in the butt. Robotron wants you to fail.
Robotron, all the games we talk about today are specifically they want you to fail, and it's good reason why.
Yeah,
and you'll hear why very shortly.
Yeah, you'll hear why and why that makes more money for everybody who is involved with the product. But anyway, I really like this thing and been very happy with it so far. So that's what I've been using there. And then lastly, I needed a new controller for my PC because my old junky one was falling apart and starting to have weird stick drift. And
oh no,
it's less expensive just to grab a new one. So I did. I picked up another 8-bit do. Look at this one. Whoops. Sorry.
Oh, Chad. Wow. You have been. They should be giving you some.
Now they should sponsor us. Yeah, no kidding. This has a cable, as you can see. I preferred wired cables when I play on a PC. I just do.
Yeah, it makes sense.
My PC is notoriously. I shouldn't say that about every PC. Everything's going to be different, but some PCs just don't have the best Bluetooth connectivity.
Yeah, Bluetooth sucks. If you get a dongle, that's usually the best way better way to go. And then, of course, wired.
How fast you
got to react.
Yeah, and in this case, I went wired. It's got a little ferrite core on there, which is nice. Anyway, if you're looking at that and you're thinking, man, that looks like an Xbox controller. Well, it kind of is intended to be. That little Xbox button in the middle even has a share button, so you can actually use this on a Series S or X.
Yeah, that's the share button on there.
Yeah, sure the does. Only thing that's really different in terms of buttons is underneath, we're talking pre-show about this a little bit, but underneath there's like little clicker buttons for your fingers. I don't know when you'd use those.
Right.
Those are in addition to...
Every controller I've ever had, well, not every controller, there's a lot of controllers out there that try to figure out, what can we do with those other fingers that the players aren't using? And there's always some paddles underneath things, it seems like.
Yeah. But these work great. Very happy with all three. So if you're, thinking, man, which ones is he talking about? I will put up in the show notes the names of each. So you can go track them down if you want to look at them.
I just got to say, I don't like controllers with too many buttons. I like enough buttons to perform most of the actions. That was one of the problems I think I had with the Steam controller. It was too configurable. It was just too many things that you could possibly do with it. And I felt like every time I played anything with it, I felt like a one-man band. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I felt like I was banging the drums with my knees, and doing the harmonica with the harmonica neck thing is just too much.
My big complaint with that controller is they didn't put two sticks on it. That's stupid. Stupid. I understand that you want to do your weird little track pad shit on that device.
D-pad, track pad.
But that Steam controller failed out of the gate without having two damn sticks on it. I'm telling you.
It was a really smart solution to many things, but it was not a very functional solution, and therefore it failed.
Yeah. I'm going to call it a dumb solution. I'm not going to call
it smart. I wouldn't say it's a dumb solution. I think for some people it worked, and when it did work for those people, just like I said, one-man bands. Mm-hmm. Some people are able to do it. They can walk out there and do the one-man band. I can't do it.
Right. Now, listen, if you wanted on your PC to have the hottest, possible, like, Xbox Elite controller or something, you're going to go spend $170, $200 on that thing. This is, under $30. So I'm also doing this on a bit of a budget. It's cheap.
Everything that we do is now on a budget. I did not realize when we got into retro gaming. I had no clue. how expensive it was about to get. Because, you know, I'm a modern gamer for the most part. You know, I've always just whatever's there then, I play it now. And I play it now and keep on moving forward. But as I start looking back, I'm like, okay, this is getting kind of expensive because people are pressuring me indirectly by saying, oh, well, if you want to play that, you need, you know, you need the FPGA, you need the, you know, the true processing that came with those original machines, and also you need a CRT. And I'm like, those are hot and big, and I'm like, where am I going to put that? And just the money, this it's
also,
like those
nobody
robots.
Makes CRTs anymore, so you're going to have to find a CRT that somehow exists. Who's making them?
I think there actually is some company making CRTs. I can't remember. I stumbled across it and immediately said, run, Brian, flee. Flee from this place because you know it's not going to be cheap because they're not mass producing them. So you know it's not going to be good.
Yeah. Even if they're making small ones, I'm just trying to see if there's anything.
And that's where I'm wanting to go, by the way. MIC, this is our overarching story. So Scott's working on this arcade machine. Yeah. And I'm working towards two things. I want a small personal size CRT, preferably as a Sony, and I want it to 13 inches. Right. Mm-hmm. And I want to be able to do that. And then I want to get a second one because I watched a documentary on a contest that Sega had where it was on. Do you remember Rock the Rock? I think is what it was called.
Yeah.
It was this contest on the Rock, the penitentiary, the penitentiary,
penitentiary, not penitentiary,
penitentiary.
Penn and Teller. No, I don't know.
Penn and the Island, The Rock.
Yeah, The Rock, the penitentiary. You know, that's the one.
Yeah, the penitentiary. That's the word
prison.
I'm for.
You're looking for the word prison.
Yeah,
just say prison.
The prison.
Yeah.
What am I, Porky Pig? So, yeah. So you just, yeah, so they had that, but they had like a small screen for the individual to see, but then they had one over top of them, like, so everybody watching them. So it's like the original Twitch, right? I mean, you played down here and then you moved your fat head so everybody could see with this monitor above. So I kind of want to set up like a kiosk with that in my in my office so we can kind of hang out with my family. It's one of the things we've been talking about. So it's going to be kind of like a double stack washing machine dryer thing.
Sure,
like that.
Sure.
Yeah.
By the way, there is a 19 inch arcade monitor complete with CRT mount. So it's not a CRT monitor, but it's a mount so it'll fit wherever you've mounted your CRT. This is what I'm going to need.
Nice.
$300 for that thing.
See?
Yeah, it adds up. It adds up.
I mean, I wasn't having any problem dropping $60 a time at AAA titles at one point in time. You know, so that's a good place to be. Luckily, I'm a little older now. I'm a little more financially stable. Mm-hmm. I can make those choices. I can purchase the things I never could when I was a kid. And I think that's a lot of where nostalgia probably hit. Some of it's like, oh yeah, remember this, and other parts of it's like, oh, I need the entire thing because I never could have done this when I was a kid.
Yeah,
welcome to your midlife crisis.
No kidding, it's a weird place to be, but we're excited to be there, and nonetheless, and we're excited to be doing it with you guys. Thank you guys for your support over the last, now today will be 5 episodes of the show already. If you can believe that,
it feels like 20.
I know,
not in a bad way though, in a way that feels comfortable, like we hit it right off with the stride.
Yeah, like maybe we live here. All right.
We live here.
So on that note, let's dive into our game this week.
Shall we play a game?
Yeah, I think we should. The game is Berserk. Hey, Brian, do you remember Berserk?
I remember Berserk only in the way that I remember when I was going to the arcade to play Pac-Man, that was the game I didn't play.
Oh, that's interesting. So you,
right?
I know you'd said this in our notes, and we talked about it a little bit off air. But this game isn't any. This is not a game that like Brian sunk quarters into as a kid. Not a huge memory for this, right?
No, I remember walking by and thinking, I don't know what that thing is talking about, but is so rudimentary. I mean, it was so white bread. It was
big time.
Yeah, it was just a guy running around in a rudimentary maze, and I was like, I can't get into that, man. I need the siren of the Pac-Man. Mm. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I know what you mean. There's a real basicness to it, and the game itself For those who just can't picture it, we're showing it on screen right now to people here. But if you're at home and you're like, wait a minute, Berserk, why can't I picture that? Let me give you a little sound. This might remind you. All right. So here is Berserk in the arcade.
Coins netted in pocket. Charge it.
Destroy it.
Intruder alert. Intruder alert.
Shoot the intruder.
Got the humanoid. Got the intruder. Shoot the humanoid.
All right. They just want to kill you. They just want to kill the humanoid.
Am I watching an episode of Battlestar Galactica from the 70s?
I mean, I don't know. The game feels like, you know, maybe it took some inspiration from there. I don't know. Possibly. But
Alan McNeil definitely said that that was a major influence. Yeah. There was some other things that occurred just in parallel that happened that made it a nice little coincidence. But
sure,
yeah.
Sure. Well, so this game it has a long storied history. We'll get to that in a second. But what we thought it would be interesting today is to take this ancient thing, and it is very old, and it's very, like you said, rudimentary in its presentation. The one thing that did make it kind of groundbreaking is this is early, 1980. Nobody was doing voice modulation in their games, and suddenly this thing comes out, and you're like, oh my gosh, what? Did I hear that? And you hear this.
Intruder alert, intruder alert.
I mean, that's unbelievable. At the time, like, nobody was doing that. That just wasn't a thing you could do. And it would also attract you because you'd be in the arcade and you'd hear these, you know, this ridiculously high volume voice compared to the rest of the gameplay. and it was compelling in that way. The game was nails hard. It was really hard on purpose.
So hard.
Yeah, it was on purpose hard because they wanted you pumping quarters into that thing. We'll get to some of that in a minute. There were a bunch of versions of the thing made. I, for example, played the Genesis version a little bit this week just for fun, just to compare them.
Wait, it was one on the Genesis?
Yeah, you want to hear how different it sounds? Check this out. Listen to this.
Oh.
It's not that, like, it's not bad. It's just,
this wasn't the Master System. This was on the Genesis.
Genesis, yeah. That's Mega Drive and Genesis.
Wow.
Yeah. So they had, they had a lot of classic arcade stuff on there. So you could, you know.
Right. So was that like, was it the Stern collection? Because there's not a lot of video arcades, games out of Stern. I mean, there's a few.
Yeah, Stern
it's
mostly
not like,
known
it's not
for,
like a Williams collection or something.
No. Stern mostly known for pinball.
Right.
So whenever you do see, this was a standalone game though on the Genesis. You would have bought this entire in its entirety as one game. Yeah, you bought Berserk. That's all you got, dude. and it's an okay port. It's not too bad. I did some port comparisons today or this week. One of them was Joust, comparing the arcade to the NES version of Joust, and. Yeah. The version of the NES Joust game is actually not bad, but you can tell you're playing a very different version of the game.
Right. Ports were really, I would love to have a whole episode or multiple episodes where we talk about just the idea of ports, where they went well and where they just bombed, because this ports are really interesting. We're going to talk about that very shortly too.
Yeah, we'll get to all that. Here's a little bit more. Shoot the humanoid, drop the intruder.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to need you to back that up because as an individual who lives in, 2022, some of these things, I can't understand what the crap they're saying.
Yeah.
I'm going to need some closed caption.
Okay. Here's the part you know for sure.
Intruder alert.
Intruder alert. Easy.
Intruder alert. I got it. Right. Or intruder alert.
Intruder alert. And then the Genesis version.
Intruder alert. Intruder alert.
All right.
The intuner alert.
Intruder alert.
Intruder was apparently a tough one to simulate. Why did you do it? Just get away from it.
Also, voice stuff on the Genesis was not easy either. They kind of had a hard time there.
No, it wouldn't.
Yeah. It wasn't like impossible, but it always sounded weird compared to the SNES.
What was the rest of it? We had intruder alert. I know I only knew the coin in pocket thing because of some stuff I read.
Yeah.
Like coin detected in pocket or something like that. First time I heard that, I'm like, I don't know what that is.
That's them saying, yo, give us your money.
Yo, we're in attract mode. Give me your money.
Yeah. Here at Stern, we ain't doing shit for free is what that sound means. This part is the part you were struggling with.
Got the humanoid.
Okay, drop the humanoid, I think is what
drop.
That is.
Okay, that makes, yeah. So I thought, I wasn't sure if it was stop the humanoid, drop the humanoid.
Well, maybe it is stop. Beep. Hold on.
Drop the humanoid.
It might be stop the humanoid, but it's a bad D if it is.
Drop,
they got a bad
drop
D.
Drop ch. It is like a D. It's like a ch or something too. So, but you know what? It was 1980, and this is one of the first voice games,
very
right?
Early, very early.
You didn't hear voices usually.
I couldn't find anything that said definitively that this was the first, but it's the first I remember hearing.
There was a Japanese game, I think, that has the title of first, and this one is always listed as one of the first. Yeah. So it must have happened pretty quick.
So this bit on the end of it. Is that Saw Intruder?
Saw intruder in half.
Saw him in half. He's a dick. Okay, how about this part?
Dupe the humanoid.
Dupe the humanoid?
Oh,
that's shoot the humanoid.
Shoot.
Okay,
shoot,
we got
the humanoid.
That one.
There you go.
All right, so super cheesy. But the reason I wanted to point all of that out and the reason we're talking about voices, we're going to jump around here a little bit. It cost about $1,000 for every voice sample they put in that thing.
Like, so per machine or overall?
Overall, like, not per machine, but like when in the development process,
okay,
your development budget would go up by $1,000 in today's dollars, about $3,000.
Right.
Every time you said, we need one more short phrase added to the game, they're like, it's another grand. Yeah, it's another grand. Keep adding it.
That's a lot of pinball money coming out of Stern, man, to take that kind of a risk.
Oh, yeah. I feel like they kept pushing and pushing and got more out of there than they expected, because its pseudo-sequel, Frenzy, only has one in it.
It only has one? I did play it, but I don't think I really paid attention to, because I think I turned it down because I was like, out of it.
Yeah, you don't need to hear that. But I'm pretty sure Frenzy just said, hey, why don't we save a little cash? In fact, here's Frenzy, just to give you a comparison. That's a shooting sound, and then
robot attack,
and that's it. All you're ever going to hear is the occasional use of robot attack.
Robot attack. That kind of almost sounded Joust-like, but that was a Williams jam.
Yeah.
They probably used some, I'm sure they shared some sound processors together too. I'm sure you just bought them, right?
Yeah. Back then you just had whatever Radio Shack had on the wall. No, I don't know. I don't know where they got that stuff, but
I think when they're selling a little bit, but yeah, it was from that time period, right? That makes sense.
Well, it's so to give you the basics, everybody, we're talking about a game that is essentially a multi-directional shooter maze game. You're presented with a maze. I'm pretty sure the maze changes every time and is never exactly the same, but I couldn't verify this.
Right. I think what I read Alan created a, like, him first name basis with Alan. He's passed away, by the way. Alan McNeil, the designer, he created a 256 by 256 grid of rooms. And I think out of that is like 10, 24 were unique. And so there you'll see up to like over 1,000 unique rooms. But it's spread out over a 256 by 256 grid, which is huge. And there's no way you'll ever even see even like three screens because this game is so freaking brutal.
Yeah, because it's so hard and you're going to spend so many quarters, you're never going to see the whole thing. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
So the effect is, this is like a procedurally generated game, but it's not really. You just had a lot of choice for the computer to choose from. And it is by, I think, every measure, and certainly by my measuring, the grandfather of dual stick shooters. Put a guy in a room. Right. Now, forget about dual stick because that didn't exist yet. But
it has the spirit of it, even if you didn't control it yet. And later on, some of the games were inspired by this were dual sticks.
Yeah, we'll talk about those. You know, I don't know if anyone remembers. I think we'll do a whole show about it sometime. But what was the game show one?
Smash TV.
Smash TV, dude.
Oh. Fantastic. From the same guys who brought you that Robotron 2084.
Robotron. Yep, I remember that. They also did that alien thing that was sort of like Aliens, but didn't have the name because they couldn't get the license. Something.
Kind of like Alien game.
Alien
Come
hominid?
Player, kind of like Alien game.
Is it Alien hominid? Am I thinking of the right thing?
Oh, Alien hominid. That's interesting. I'm not sure
remember.
About that.
I don't freaking remember. But anyway. This thing is just a very early progenitor of this idea of like, all right, you're in the middle of a bunch of stuff. You need to kill them and you have multi-directional shooting. And there's a billion games based on this mechanic now. This is obviously rudimentary. It was early. It's not the greatest thing in the world in terms of implementation. Two sticks would be better. You have to stop to shoot. And you have to be facing the direction that you're running to shoot that direction. So if you need to quickly shoot behind you, you've got to take the time to turn and then shoot. So it's difficult just in that way.
And you got got eight directions, and you can't touch the freaking electrified walls.
Oh, yeah, the walls will kill you.
Like you said, it's like it is definitely the beginnings of the dual stick shooter where you're surrounded by the enemy.
Yeah.
You know, you start out and you're surrounded, and it requires that you have the ability to quickly swivel around and shoot everybody.
Yeah, think of Geometry Wars is a good example of a modern example. Yeah. That game is, you know, mayhem, and you're dying a lot. You know, a lot of that DNA comes from a game like Berserk. Now, the hardness of it there's a multitude of hard things happening. Number one, the walls will kill you, so don't bump into the walls. Number two, it's really hard to shoot, so you got to be smart about how you're shooting. Number three, there aren't patterns to memorize, so you can't do that. What they do is just populate the area with worse enemies, and they all fire at you, and it just gets harder. And then thirdly, when you clear an area, that stupid bouncy ball, what's his name?
Evil Otto comes chasing you before you. Before you clear it, he's the hurry up. He's the hurry up mode in this.
And every one of these games has it. We talked about Joust in our first episode.
Right.
That game. Oh, Ken Griffey Jr. for some reason is showing up in my video.
I love Ken Griffey Jr. from the Super Nintendo.
I don't know why that's up there though. But anyway. Yeah.
If you're a little bit younger, just a minute younger, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, when Splinter is telling you to hurry up, and if you don't, you get hit. That's kind of what we got here.
It's Evil a little Otto. Bit like that. And in Joust, it was that stupid dragon. Same deal.
Yeah.
Pterodactyl, I guess.
Pterodactyl.
The Pterodactyl. He would come out and get you. And a lot of games employed this. Well, why? Because they don't want you sitting around, you know, thinking about how you're going to game this system and then, you know, put less quarters in there. So this is, you know, this is before technologies like rubber banding would happen and things like NBA Jam and other games. This was designed to be so hard and fun that you just have to do one more try. I know I can do better. Yeah. One more try, you know?
Yeah, challenging, right? And that's one of the things I've read. Oh, my God, I read so many interviews. I've spent more time learning about Berserk than I ever played.
Mm-hmm.
But I've read so many interviews with Alan McNeil. I want to call him
Ally McBeal.
I want to call him Ally McBeal, but it's not right.
Yeah,
it's
Alan definitely not right.
McNeil. And he's like, he passed away, I think, in 2019, but he did so many interviews over the years about the development of this game and the other things that he did. And it was an amazing hunt to try to find the data for all this stuff. And man, he made this game. He started out with it being impossible. And then he made it a little less impossible. So he started from that point. He's like, okay, here's an impossible thing, and then let's make it possible. And so he went from, he's like working the maze backwards, right?
Yeah,
kind of like that. You start at the end, and you work your way back.
That's an interesting way to make a game. I wonder,
like,
does From Software, when they make these Souls-likes and Souls games, do they go, you know what, let's make it impossible, and then we'll work our way back.
Then we'll work our way back.
Yeah.
But luckily they're not trying to take quarters from us. I don't know what they're trying to do. Steal our souls? Is that what they're trying to do?
Make us feel bad. Yeah. I don't know.
Make us feel bad about ourselves.
When I play those games, I just feel bad. So who knows what the deal is. But I'm looking at the Atari 2600 version of the game. I actually kind of like the look of it better. It's a little chunkier.
Yes. And you're absolutely correct. It is. I like the way it looks. And it's a little more playful, which you kind of need because the original is very unplayful. But you don't know if you notice, but you're a much larger object in a much smaller maze.
Yeah, this is
that makes it difficult.
Your telltale horrible Atari sounds.
Yeah.
Oof. Ooh, that's so bad. But it's it is what it is. They made it also for the 5200. That looked a little better. The Vectrex system has a version of of the game. The one system I would really like to get my hands on one day, probably won't.
I had only ever heard about the Vectrex and hadn't never taken the initiative to look for the Vectrex or even what it was. All that I knew, it was a vector-based console that was around for a while. And I did a deep dive on it as well, and I was very impressed. Did you ever get a chance to actually see real life?
I had two friends with them, and we'd go over there and play them all the time. They were great. I had three friends with games.
Did they have Berserk?
I had two. I don't know if they had this game, but the one guy had – he definitely had this game, and then Another friend of mine had an Intellivision, and I think there was a version of this for the Intellivision or some kind of ripoff for it. And the Vectrex version was so much better. At least we thought it was. I'm looking at it now. It's like post-it
size. I'm looking at it now, and it looks way better, because what you're talking about is the pixel size. Yeah. I mean, it's like the opposite. We just saw the chunky things on Atari.
Yeah.
But, man, this feels like high definition because the pixel sizes are so small.
Well, and it's not even pixel. Well, I mean, effectively, they're pixels.
Yeah, it's not pixels. It's creating the effect.
Yeah. So Vectrex is cool. Vector is cool in general, but it was never going to last.
And it was. I didn't know this. I always thought it was a Vectrex. I just thought the machine created vectors, but it actually was a standalone unit, right? It had its own screen and everything.
Oh
right?
Yeah, oh yeah. The like whole thing
tiny,
was
like a little tiny arcade machine.
Yeah, it was like a little arcade machine. It was about the size of a typewriter in terms of like how much space it would take, and then you'd look into it, kind of like a. It was almost like a little hooded. Checking the replay of an NFL game, you know?
For some reason, when you said you look into it, it felt like for a minute you were saying it was stealing your soul. You had to look. You had to look deep
look into the eyes of the Vectrex and whatever. But Vectrex had its moment, and I wish I could get a hold of one, but didn't happen.
I'm looking at the gameplay right now of Vectrex, and I'll tell you right now, there's already something that makes it more playable in my mind, and that was the speed, because it's like there's almost like a scaling problem when I'm playing the arcade version of Berserk. It feels like my character is running in place, like he's running in sand. And so it takes a little bit of time to get used to the speed of it.
Mm-hmm.
And the Vectrex almost felt more in scale, like it looks like you're moving like you should at that size in the environment.
Yeah, I agree. It's a cool thing. If you ever get to see one working, I think Ibbet got one on eBay, that bastard.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. Lame, right?
Oh.
One thing that's interesting here is the game was originally going to be black and white, and it came from a dream he had.
Fever dream.
He was an employee at Universal Research Laboratories. This was a division of Stern Electronics. They were just sort of getting into this. Anyway, dreamed of a black and white video game where he had to fight robots. So he wrote it in BASIC. Bam, that's what happened. But they abandoned the black and white motif because the color game Defender was released.
Defender ruined everything.
It came out earlier that year and was really popular. So Stern was like, we got to have, color. Right. So at first they did that whole thing Space Invaders used to do, which was lay colored tape on a screen. And it would, green, red, blue, whatever, semi-translucent tape on top of your CRT, and you'd go all the way down to the bottom that way. So when your Space Invaders would drop down a level and move this way, they went from green down to red. And the effect was, oh, it's changing colors. Ooh. But really, it was black and white.
My mind is simple. You have fooled me with your optical illusion.
That's right. So they tried to do that at first. They didn't like how that looked. Earliest versions ended up shipped, or the ones they shipped after that were all CRT color displays, and it was effectively a color game after that. But
I'm curious now, you say Ibbet, we're gonna have to have Ibbet with the Vectrex stuff. He's going to show us now the Vectrex also, when I was reading, had some really cool, I saw some video, and it had some really cool overlays, like you were just talking about. It's just like one acetate sheet you stick in the it doesn't touch the screen. It looks like it fits in like a little, almost like a little tray, like a area sleeve.
It depends on which one. When I was growing up, my dad had a Space Invaders cabinet, a number of them, and they were all tape right on the screen. Think of it as like...
Right. Now, I'm talking about the Vectrex. You're talking about arcades.
Oh, Vectrex.
Right?
No, Vectrex, as far as I know, the Vectrex never tried to do anything with color, as far as I know. I never saw anything in color.
Right. Well, maybe I'm thinking the wrong thing, but I thought I saw a video, and they were playing something, and they had like a color overlay that stuck into the front of the Vectrex. But maybe your friend didn't have one. I don't know.
That's entirely possible.
How expensive are overlays? I don't know.
Dan was kind of an ass. Maybe he just didn't have it.
Maybe he had them and he just left them in the box.
Yeah. And he and I don't get along that well now. He doesn't have his Vectrex anymore, or else maybe
wonder you don't get along anymore. That was all that was holding that friendship together.
Yep. That's basically it. Let's see. By the way, that main antagonist you mentioned, Evil Otto, is actually named after a guy named Dave Otto, who was a security guard at the designer Alan McNeil's former job over at Dave Nutting Associates.
Yes, the Nuttings.
I don't like that. He was notorious for chewing out people while keeping a big smile on his face, hence the reason Evil Otto always has a smile on his face while he's chasing the player. So that's a fun little side note.
I love it.
Here's
I'll
the
tell
deal
you about Alec. Yeah. Let me tell you something about Alec McNeil. Yeah. Alan McNeil.
From Alec McBeal. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. From Alec McBeal. Let me tell you about what I've seen of him. For somebody who created the most white bread, generic shooter game from Berserk, he was just one of us, man. Almost every interview, he goes back and talks about the BS of working, you know, having to answer to the boss, and the boss is always a moron. He didn't say those in those black and white terms, but you could tell he didn't put up with no crap. He would try to be a team player up until a point, and then he'd be like, I hate this place, and he would just take from what I saw, most of his job in the industry was, it always ended with, take this job and shove it. I'm out.
He didn't like it. He wasn't. He
but
wasn't
that's okay. That this means he's a man without compromise, right?
Yeah. No, I mean that basically is what that is, I think.
Yeah.
He does. He goes into some detail about.
Very human.
Yeah. He did seem like a pretty human guy. He's worth reading about, by the way, everybody. If you haven't had a chance, this guy's Alan McNeil, not to be confused with Ally McBeal, is a really interesting dude.
With the 1990s Calista Flockhart.
Yeah. There you go. He didn't interview once where they brought up the whole difficulty thing. And he said in this interview, Alan's rule of thumb was to take the price of a movie ticket. I don't know what that would have been then. $5, $4, whatever.
Probably three or so, maybe back in
something like that.
1980.
So he said, take a movie ticket, divide it into pennies per minute. All right. Nice. We could do this math real quick. Let's see.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Pennies per minute.
Yeah.
Coming up on TMS.
Why is that playing? Hold on. Shit. Jeez.
I love that. That's how your calculator is like an early Berserk model.
I pushed a button. I didn't mean to. All right. Let's say it was $4 just for clarity. Okay.
Right.
So $4.
Okay. Yeah. I live in a small town, so it's probably a lot cheaper, but you guys probably, it was probably $4 where you were.
So that's 400 pennies.
Yeah.
Pennies per minute. So how would you do that, though? You take the ticket and divide it into pennies per minute.
Right. So the amount of time, so a quarter. So we got 25 pennies, right? So we got,
Oh, he says that's between 3 and 5 minutes. He says my goal.
So how much movie could you go see for a quarter, essentially, is what he's saying.
Yeah, and he's saying, so my goal was to enable beginners to last about 3 minutes. That was the goal.
Right.
Like, literally, that was a chief tenet of the design to begin with,
right?
Which was, hey, let's let them play for 3 minutes. That feels pretty good. But then after that, and that made me wonder how much of this is like, how much of this is of this model or this kind of thinking goes on with like free to play stuff today. You know what I mean?
Oh my God. You know, they do.
Yeah. Well, they got to, right? They have to. I mean, obviously they have to think about monetization and all the ways that they do it these days. But I would love to know.
Is that the touchstone of entertainment? Is it like you compare it to movies? It's like, oh, here's the touchstone of entertainment. Everybody feels like they're getting a good deal going to the movies. Yeah. No one feels like they're getting a good deal going to the movies.
No one now. Not now, we don't. Even then, I remember thinking like $3-4 was too much, you know?
Right. But I guess it's like going, okay, the movie industry's done figured it out. They've said this is the maximum amount of we can charge people and they'll still come to the theater, right?
Yeah.
So I guess that was a smart move.
Yeah. By the way,
I think I read that early on he said that the gameplay, like the first draft, didn't have any walls, no maze stuff. That was to slow down the robots. It was 6 seconds.
Oh my jeez!
You wouldn't even have time enough for the quarter to drop into the.
So that's interesting. The wall would act as a way to slow you both down, not just the robots, but you.
Yeah, it would slow the whole gameplay down.
Yeah.
And and he also said he had to like dumb down the AI somewhat. I mean, you're not really going to be a real AI in this per se, like we think of today. But yeah, he said he had to make the robots stupid, where they would run at each other, shoot each other, you know, team damage,
kind of
slow it down.
The game, because
robots are hard.
If you say Berserk without walls, it reminds me of a certain game. I'll play a little sound for here.
It reminds me
of this. That sound like something you played recently?
Now that game is blowing up the audio, right? It doesn't need no voices.
Oh no, hell no, it does not. That's Robotron, by the way, and that game is a direct sort of lineage to what we're talking about here. I don't know that Robotron exists without Berserk and maybe Frenzy as a follow-up. Because Robotron basically took that and then went balls to the wall with it and said, all right, what if we have no walls? What if these robots are coming from every direction? What if there's tons of them? What if there are innocents in there you don't want to shoot? Like, what if we really strip you of your quarters and never and made you poor? What if we did that?
Right. What if we did that? What if we just took everything and just put it all into a single game? And the developers of Robotron, I don't want to get too far into it because I ended up accidentally going into a deep dive on it, too. Mm. But they definitely said, oh, yeah, this was our answer to everything we hated about Berserk. Mm-hmm. It's like, how can we fix it and make it fun?
Yeah, and they did. And that game's a lot more like a dual-stick shooter. It's still got its problems, but I wouldn't mind. I know there was like an N64 re-envisioning, and then there was like a PlayStation 1 had a game that was like a, hey, here's Robotron, but for a new generation or whatever. I wouldn't mind somebody taking another crack at that and make something rad out of it. I think in
the indie scene, that's where you can really just kind of wiggle around and do your thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Now check this out. I don't know if you knew this. Whole bunch of people died playing Berserk, or at least famously they did. Not a whole bunch, but you know, a handful of people died.
Any more than I don't think I know of any video game that anyone's died from. So that would be way more.
Than usual. I mean, I know there's like internet cafes in China where people play too long and they die and that sort of stuff. But
right.
We're talking about these unique deaths. I'll give you these examples. There's one that's absolutely true. According to an article in Video Games Magazine entitled Death of a Video Gamer, Peter Burkowski had not been drinking when he arrived at Friar Tuck's game room in Calumet City, Illinois. He had been using drugs. He hadn't been using drugs either. According to the owner of Fire Tux, how do they know that though? Well, anyway, whatever. According to the owner of the thing, Peter and his friend walked in at 8:30 p.m. Saturday, April 3rd, went straight to the games. Peter was 18, likable, and apparently healthy. An A student, he had plans to become a doctor one day. Peter was also good with the games. In 15 minutes of play, he wrote his initials at least twice in the top 10 on the Berserk screen. And then, tired of that game, he turned, took about four steps, dropped his quarter into a second machine, and collapsed. By 9 p.m., Peter was dead. The cause, heart attack at age 18.
No, Peter. No, Peter.
Yeah. Look what this game hath wrought.
I actually read, I watched a video. There's a video on YouTube about this particular one. And he was supposedly a young man. Mm-hmm. It was cold. It was snow. He was out. He was walking around, you know, exhausting himself. And as a result, he had some pre-existing heart conditions.
Yeah, well, that'll make a difference.
That were undiagnosed. I really did think about it. I'm like, you know, it didn't necessarily really kill him, but I played Berserk. Mm-hmm. It can certainly put a strain on you emotionally, you know, and chemically, because your adrenaline is pumping. You're trying to get those high scores. And yeah, I mean, I don't think it, you know, certainly he was, you know, about to fall over, but Berserk hastened that, if you ask me.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm going to say whether you can't say the video game killed him, but you can definitely say that was there the day he died. That's one way of looking at it. Now, I found the article of when he died, the actual post in the newspaper. It's one of my favorite headlines. Heart is blamed in death of video game patron 18.
Nice.
Now, what that tells me, the band Heart. Barracuda band is in charge of killing people. So
that's big arcade shifting the blame away as quickly as possible. They had all the papers in their back pocket.
Yeah, you can't never trust
Big Cade.
Big Cade. Big Cade will get you. Yo. all right, I'm going to read you these other ones. These are all great. Also true. On an unusually warm Monday night, on March 20th, 1988, Edward Clark Jr., age 17, of Lansing, Illinois, another Illinois native, found himself at Friar Tuck's game room once again in the same city.
Stupid Friar Tuck's game room!
Yeah. This is 88, so this is, 6 years after the death of Burkowski. Seeing the game Berserk had a couple of quarters up on the glass, no one around, he took one of the quarters, put it in the game, began to play. Someone immediately stepped from behind the row of games, claiming ownership of the quarter, which was a lie, and wanting his money back, also a lie. All of this led to an argument that got both gamers tossed out and eventually led to the stabbing death of Edward Clark Jr.
No! Over a game of Berserk?
Yeah, not worth it. Not worth it. Final story.
Don't be stealing it. Now, I verified that one, too.
Yeah, these are all real.
Several sources.
Yeah, there's plenty of, like, you know, apocryphal tales out there. These are real.
Right.
Here's your final one.
Now we're about to hear a lie.
This one's, oh, this one's a lie?
I hope this one was the true one.
All right, so we're doing two truths and a lie today. That's the game we're playing. Okay, this one is a lie. The coin-operated version of Berserk had the distinction of being associated with the first ever video game death. Jeff Daly, 19 years old, suffered a heart attack in 81 shortly after playing the game and setting the high score of 16,660. You know, because, you know, Satan. Anyway, that Satan. Was a story that went 666. Around.
666.
Yeah, but that sounds to me is like somebody took the real death of this Peter Rakowski guy.
Right.
And then made up another one. And some of the details are the same.
Right. Maybe yeah. some unscrupulous magazine sensational, you know, the Globe. Which ones were they? Which ones all the stupid mags, the terrible magazines my mom, my grandma used to read growing up in the grocery?
National Enquirer?
That's it. Sounds like a National Enquirer.
I was going to say National Geographic, but that ain't it. That's definitely not it. All right. So let's talk about the follow-up. I don't think it very good. I think it's a bad sequel. The follow-up is, it's not a true sequel, Frenzy. But it may as well be a sequel. It's called Frenzy. We played a little bit of it before. Here's a reminder of what they say in that game.
Robot attack.
Yeah, robot attack. They should have called the game Robot Attack, honestly.
Right.
It's not as good. It's okay, but I played a bunch today, and it's not, it's no Berserk. And I think part of it is it's easier. If it's fair to say.
Yeah, it's way easier because in this one you can actually there's walls you can shoot through, you got bullet bouncing, the scale seems better, so when you're running, it mm-hmm. seems like you're running at a more natural pace for the size of the screen. There's a lot of things that seem, and you also can kill Otto, by the way.
You can kill Otto, and if you do, he'll get worse and harder, and then
if
you kill him again.
Oh my God, that's so scary, though. Once you kill him a couple of times, you better get out of that room. By the way, when you leave a room, Otto stops chasing you, if you didn't know that.
Yeah, if you leave Otto's, it's just like Joust. You clear the level and the pterodactyl usually.
Yeah.
The same idea. But they got these like robots. Some of the walls reflect your bullets, so they're like bouncing around in there. And some of the walls, like you said, are destructible, which, again, was pretty weird and new idea at the time. No one thinks of this game, though, very often. Like, it doesn't have the cachet that Berserk did.
I don't think it really hit too many. I was trying to find all the data, and I kind of ran out of time. I'm not 100% sure on this, so this is off the cuff. It looked like this was also written by Allie McNeil.
Allie McNeil, yeah.
Alan McNeil.
Yeah.
And it was just a kit that you would convert your Berserk cabinets from. So you would replace the processor and the ROM.
It was a new main board. We used to do this with Galaxian and Kamikaze 3, which is a weird bootleg game that we'll have to talk about. We got to talk about bootleg games at some point because that was a weird market back then. Very odd time. And you have
such an inside information on that, too. So I'm very interested.
Yeah. We'll definitely do that. But that's how you do it. You'd swap out boards, sometimes just a chip or two, but usually the whole board had to go.
This board's got to go.
And some of the boards were just hacked versions of the previous board. And sometimes that was, I didn't realize that they could shoot themselves. These robots are dumb.
Oh, yeah. Well, the first ones did, too. They could, they could shoot themselves. No, because they couldn't bounce off.
You know why?
Because
the bounce off. Yeah, the bounce off wasn't in the first game, so that's why.
Yeah.
But this is just a lot. This is a lot easier of a game. It's fine. It's okay. It's not great.
It's a half measure of where we're trying to get to, which I think, you know, Robotron kind of, we didn't really need it, but, you know, why not? Why not? I mean, you know.
Dude, Robotron rocked. Gosh, dang it. Robotron was good.
Yeah, I didn't play much of Robotron back in the day either, so, when we deep dive into that one, I'm going to have to dive in.
That's very, very good. So we talked about Frenzy. 2,600, 5,200, and 7,800 ports of the game. Vectrex ports, we talked about that Genesis version I played.
That's something I didn't need to know, by the way. That bit of data that you just dumped out, that was something that cost a lot of my life. Because I went to the Atari... What's that?
You went deep. I noticed you went deep.
I went deep. That was just a really quick blur, but really, let me tell you, I went to an Atari website where they're making new art. They're making box art. They're having conventions. they're making new carts to go in the 7800s and the Jaguars, and it's just like, even 2600 is still highly, there's still a good bit of people
oh yeah, they're devin for it. Some
developer
I follow who does like phone games just made an NES game, an actual cartridge built ready to plug into an NES, which that's such insanity to me, but also wicked cool that anyone's still doing that. I think that's great.
Yeah, if you go to Atari Age, that's where I went. It's a great forums for Atari and retro stuff, but mostly for Atari. Mm-hmm. Alan McNeil was on there a good bit. He actually was it was kind of like, you know, counseling or consulting some people who were developing some ports for the 78, which didn't originally have it. So there's a lot of stuff going on there. Also, by the way, such a weird thing. We got to get back to ports eventually, but Berserk, $4 million is how much Stern sold the name and idea to Atari to allow them to port it. They didn't have to do anything. They just said, they didn't give them code. They didn't give them nothing. They just said, $4 million, Atari, make your version. And they did just that.
So that'd be what, 12 to 16 million today? They sold it for that?
Right.
Just the rights.
By the way, that's why Alan told them to take this job and shove it at Stern.
Oh, because he said, did he get said, any of that money or what? He didn't get any of that.
He was making, you know, it's okay money, but he was trying to get more money for his team and everything, and they weren't moving. And one of the big guys up top said, yeah, we sold it for $4 million. We didn't have to give him nothing. And it's like, okay.
Yeah.
You just told the wrong man the wrong thing.
Like, so
he went home and he was listening to his country music, and he was like, that's it. I'm angry.
Yeah. And then his alarm went off, yelled intruder alert, and he had to kill a robot. it's like comic book artists and writers and creators at the time. They didn't get the credit they deserved. They also didn't get the money they deserved, and it's not that different.
Yes.
So IP sales I think maybe that stuff's a little better today. Certainly in comics it is, but
it's not
great.
This is how I look at it. Alan was more – I can relate more to this guy's story than just about anybody else, because I am – at my heart, a creator. I like creating things, but I don't like business as much. And,
same.
Business is where the money's at. Creating is not where the money's at. Creating is somewhat its own reward. And that's very defeating, because you look over and you're like, I'm doing all the work over here. And what is business doing? Business, like, is sitting on its butt and it's making lots of money on my work.
Yeah. No, you're not wrong.
But to be honest, I mean, if business is not over there moving the money, I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, why would you? Because you don't like business. Neither do I. I'm terrible at it. I hate it.
I just get mad.
I hate self-promotion. I'd rather just make cool things, but I have to pay the bills, so I have to do some of that.
Like I said, I was just shocked at how he just seemed like one of us. One of us.
Yeah. Well, here's the deal. You're asking yourselves, man, you guys have really sold me on Berserk as an ancient artifact of the video game world and how far we've come. And it's still, there's a little DNA still in some of these games I love. Where can I play it? And the answer would be archive.org has it. All right. They also have the Frenzy deal, but I don't think you need it. Emulation, of course. They have two cabinet versions that I've seen here locally in the little chain we have here called Nickelcades. Where you go play a bunch of nickels for old video
games.
Now,
is that true? Is it nickels or is it just a gimmick?
No, it's nickels. It's not even tokens. You go in there, you pay them. So you go in there with a minimum cover charge of $5. That $5 is given back to you in all nickels.
Okay, good.
And then you go spend $5 worth of nickels. You just have a minimum.
I was about to say, where do you get nickels from? I don't even know how to get nickels.
They give them to you. Yeah, they do it. Okay. And they just recycle them. They basically are using them like tokens, but they're actual U.S. currency nickels that they use in this place.
Right.
It's really great. Nickelcades are great. They have all these amazing old machines in really great condition. If you ever get a chance to go to one, I'm sure there's equivalents in other states, but we really like Nickelcades here. They're cool. and they're still doing, they seem to be doing okay despite the pandemic, surprisingly. I guess when everyone figured out that you had to breathe this disease on each other and it wasn't so much dealing with surfaces, I think they probably survived it okay.
Scott.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about for my birthday this year.
Yeah. Your birthday.
My birthday.
Uh-huh. Birthday.
I was looking around trying to find the largest arcade I could within reasonable either driving distance or, you know, a short flight. And I landed in Chicago at the Galloping Ghost Arcade, who claims to be the largest arcade in the world.
Also the home state or the home city of Stern as well.
Yeah, most of the, oh man, you can't talk about arcades without Chicago. I mean, it is just a constant.
It's an arcade town
with the developers and everything. It's
No, I love that. Yeah. I always wished that Chicago would have remained. It's still, there's a lot of development there, but not nearly as much as like California and Ontario.
Right,
and
right.
Like different places. Even Texas, I think, has more development now. I think it would be really cool if Chicago was just known more as the hotbed for game development and less of that was in, you know, California and stuff. I don't know why. I just feel like
Look at the top Yelp places in Chicago to go arcade. Dave and Buster's not doing well in this list.
Dave and Buster's is like, they're the, how do you put this without, I don't want to be
everywhere.
Rude. They're the Starbucks of coffee, of arcades. Right. No, arcades. They're the, Dave and Buster's is the Starbucks of arcades. That's what I was trying to say. So it's just standard and boring and kind of not a good deal. And the machines are kind of not well kept. And it's, you know, a lot of ticket machines. Freaking F right. The ticket machines. Don't want that stuff.
I'm interested. Man. We talked just briefly about it last week, but you know, I've never really played outside the, you know, the mainstream arcade games. I've never got into the gambling type, pseudo gambling games or anything like that. Yeah. But what's the draw there? I don't know.
Well, gambling. The draw there is it's gambling. That's people like to gamble.
Yeah, but I've seen a lot of people because it's such minor money. I mean, it's not even something that you think. Is it just
it ain't about the amount of money. It's how much the dopamine hit are you getting off of this little gamble you're doing?
Yeah.
And if it's cheap enough to get into it, like nickel slots. The reason people like nickel slots is A, they can't afford anything else, and B, they still get that little high from like,
right.
And they get a bunch of coins. You know?
So, the closest I can think of that actually gives me the dopamine from these little micro gambles is the slide coin things.
Oh, those, I freaking hate
those
that
used to get me
bastard.
Very excited.
He used to hate. Yeah. I wanted to just jump on one once.
You just want to bump it about 20 times
and
now.
I just want to kick it and just boom. Yeah. They're like in the cement. You can barely budge those damn things. And if you do, you get in trouble. It'll like make a tilt noise and the guy will come over and go, what the hell is going on? And you're like, you're in trouble. Don't do it. Don't do that.
What are they going to do? What are they going to do? Kick you out?
Yeah.
I'm heading down the street.
They're going to call the...
I don't like your stupid games anyway.
They're going to call the leaning quarters police. I don't know. I don't know what they do. I hate that stuff. Those piss me off so bad. Well, anyway, there's your game. It's Berserk, and you should play it.
It is Berserk.
You should play it just to get a taste of, you know, this early thing. And I have some friends who feel as strong about Berserk as I do about Joust.
I think it's important. Like, okay, so I think if I'm a game developer now, if I'm starting out in game development, I think Berserk would be a good study. For how to, you know, because it's such a basic game, but these ports that came out for all the different games, I think you would learn so much to try to understand how each of those port makers looked at handling the difficulty, because this game is all about managing difficulty, the balance. And I think there's some really good core design work here that's just really important.
Yeah, I agree. And also Frenzy dialed back the difficulty too much, I think. And
made it
boring.
There you go. What not to do.
Because as punishing as Berserk is, its strength is that it's hard. And so to the point that you get frustrated, but you go back in and you know it can be beat. And then when you do, it's like really satisfying.
Right.
Maybe that's the roguelike player in old arcades. I don't know.
Right.
Or old arcade game players, I suppose, is how I should say that. But whatever that is, it would drive you. Frenzy didn't drive you. Why? Well, the stakes were lower. It's just like, meh, I'm a little stick dude. Here comes that ball. He's not nearly as bad as in the first game. Pew, pew. Oh, I heard him. Like, it's just, I don't know. There's just something about that.
And the mere fact that it was like, it's so difficult. It's like the mere fact that it takes you, I mean, you're lucky if you can get 3-4 screens deep. In Berserk, it's just an average player.
There you go.
Now I know there's you know there's people that the arcade managers love to hate. You know, it's like, oh no, here comes a guy that's going to spend a quarter. It's going to be here for an hour.
Yeah,
but that's not me.
No, screw that guy that comes there and does that in one quarter.
Yeah, that guy tried to beat Donkey Kong that one time.
Yeah, it ain't me.
Then he cheated.
Although I could do that with Missile Command, Crazy Climber.
Right.
Joust and one other. What other game am I thinking? Oh, the original Super Mario Brothers, the one where you'd run and bump the crabs on the pipes and clear the broom.
Yeah,
not the
yeah, that was yeah the original. Yeah,
yeah, the original yeah Mario Brothers. Wasn't yeah super yet. It was just Mario Brothers. That game, I could play that on one quarter for
it's hours. The Mario Brothers, right? Before we get Super,
I don't think it's the. It's just
I always get it confused.
Isn't it just Mario Brothers? Hold on.
It's definitely not just Mario Brothers. It might be Mario Brothers.
I think it's just. I think it's Mario
that
Brothers.
Just in there.
Yeah, I keep putting just. Hold on. Here it is. Mario Brothers Arcade. Yeah, it's just Mario Brothers.
Okay. All right. Just so it's not. Yeah. It's just Mario
I'm just
Brothers
saying just as a modifier. Somebody's selling one of these for $4,000 on eBay, so get on it.
Right. Is it Brothers or Bros?
It's Bros.
It's Bros.
But okay, we knew it, man. We know that B-R-O-S period is short for Brothers. Everybody else right out there goes,
do we?
Super Mario Bros. It's like, no, it's Brothers. Just like Versus is Versus, not Verse. It's not Verse.
I'll tell you one more thing. I don't think I spelled Berserk right one time this week for this game.
Well, and also, I'll tell you something. It's been a little tricky doing research for Berserk because there's that really popular anime.
Anime.
And, yeah. So every search I did, I got anime results. This is pissing me off. And I'm sure it's good. Not just the anime, the manga it's based on. Like, I'm sure it's wonderful. I'm not complaining about that. I'm just saying the SEO.
Google wouldn't lay off either, man.
Yeah.
Google wouldn't lay off with the, are you sure you didn't mean no?
Yeah. I'm telling you, there's something to being able to search for a word and get proper results. And when you don't, it's like, shit. Well, how else am I supposed to say this? So then I would put Berserk game, and then I would get some PS2 version of the anime game. It's like, all right.
I have the most success when I do the name and then the year. That's usually when I have to.
That's not too bad. All right. Look at you. Google Foo over there.
Google Foo, baby.
I got better results on DuckDuckGo. I'll just put it that way.
Oh, good.
I like DuckDuckGo anyway.
That's a great game.
Yeah. No, I mean, that search engine, not the game.
Oh, okay.
Let's now move on to a part of the show that we can't live without. It's a carryover even from our last show, and it's this right here.
Destroy it.
Time to play Guess My Game. We will give each other audio hints as to the game we picked and a year, and then we try to guess. I'm going to start. The hint for my game is 2003.
Oh, okay. So later, that might have been into the Xbox era, right?
Original. That would have been original, yes. Original was the original Xbox, PS2, GameCube, that era.
Right.
But don't let that fool you. I don't want to give you any more hints. Yeah, don't get tripped up here. Here you go. I'm going to play it. Not as easy as you think, though. It's not.
Does it have Mario in it?
It does, but you're going to have to figure out which one this is.
It's got a Mario in it.
Don't look at chat. Chat, don't make him cheat. Don't look at the chat.
I'm not looking at chat.
Any ideas?
I just got to decide which one. Yeah. I just got to decide which one, right? Yeah.
Yep, and I'm not going to... It needs to be the exact title. 2003.
Too early for Sunshine. So it'd have to be 3, right? Super Mario Bros.
Actually, that would have been...
3?
You would have been... Sunshine would have been that era, but you're not... It's not Sunshine. So you say 3? Is that your answer? No.
Yeah, this is actually harder than I thought because I thought it would be super obvious.
Super obvious brothers.
Super obvious, but yeah, I'm going to say 3. I'm going to say Super Mario Brothers 3.
All right, so it's a little bit of a cheat. I'll say you're very close. Here's the answer. This was Super Mario Advance 4. Which was Super Mario Brothers 3, basically remastered for the device.
Right,
that came out in 2003. Now, ironically...
That sounds really good.
It is good. It's very good. Here's the thing, though. It's actually my favorite way to play that game, because it just looks so much better. 3 on the NES is a great game, but it looks... It has all the you know, flashy. And by flashy, I don't mean good. I mean like flickery quality of some bad NES games.
Right, right, right.
That stuff is there. It's about as, you know, it's about as maxed out as that machine ever got was running 3. And this version of it, which is a complete sort of facelift, but with, you know, parallax scrolling backgrounds, it basically made the game look like it was made for the Super Nintendo, right, and not just the Nintendo. Right. But it's the same game, same thing mechanically, music and all that. That's all remastered, but it's the same songs. They put Mario's voice in it here and there, which didn't exist in that old one, that sort of thing. Put it out on the Game Boy Advance, and then they dual packed it. So in that same cartridge, you got Super Mario Brothers Advance, or Super Mario Advance 4, Super Mario Brothers 3 was the full title. It's kind of confusing. And then below that, you can choose that, or you can choose the original Mario Brothers game that I just was talking about. And
right,
that's
right.
Also remastered. Has two player if you want to have, you know, Luigi.
God, I hated that one, by the way.
I love that game. Love it.
I just want to say okay. I hate it, like, for the first couple of, at least the first 15 minutes I play it. Every time I play it, it always takes 15 minutes for me to remember, you got to have momentum to jump.
Yeah,
you do. I don't mind having momentum to slide, but I like to be able to jump and kind of move at the same time. And you got to start that momentum before you jump.
Yeah, you got to, there's a cadence to it. But yeah, once you get it down, it's real good. I really like that original game. And that,
so I kind of halfway got it. Does that mean I get half rations?
Yeah, you can have half rations. Portion? You can have portions. Oh, that's fine. Man. You get a half a point. But yeah, the upticked graphical quality of both those versions are really great. And it's the only place I really want to play 3.
Right.
2 is fine. 2 is fine. 2 is weird because it wasn't even a Mario game originally. It was something they bought from somebody else.
I don't remember much about 2.
Oh my gosh. You're picking turnips and throwing turnips and you fight Birdo.
Right.
It's weird. It's a weird ass game.
That's right.
It wasn't even the original game is not a Nintendo game. They bought it from somebody else who was making like a platformer and they reskinned it and called it Mario 2.
Nintendo's so weird sometimes. Sometimes they'll be like, no, we don't want anything from anybody else. Get out of here.
Yeah.
We NDAs for all. And then other times they're like, hey, we like what you got over there. Let's take a look at that.
Yeah, it's very weird how they do that. But they turned around and said, hey, what if we made possibly the greatest Mario game ever made? And 3 is very, very good. But if you think 3 looked ugly, because it is a little ugly, in my opinion, then this is the version to play. Okay. The GBA version is great. I'm playing that again right now. In fact,
agreed.
Not right now, but before the show.
Right this second. I can't even listen to you people.
All right, I'm playing yours. Give me what's my hints for this?
The year is of much is 23 years prior to your game. So it's 1980, same year as the Berserk. That can't be right. Wait a minute. No, that can't be right. Let me do one second.
You wrote down 1980, but I don't think that's what you meant. Did you mean 1990?
Wait a second. Let me see.
Did you mean?
Let me take a look. 1840? That doesn't seem right. Even in my mind, that seems wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, I meant 1990. Ah. I was going to say that couldn't have been 19. So 13 years before. The year was 1990.
You'll be forgiven. You've been doing a Berserk 1980 thing the whole show. So
right.
That's fine. All right, here it is. So 1990. I'm going to get my head straight. Here we go. Oh.
We were of one mind this week.
Hold on. This is... Why am I struggling? The Nintendo... you can play them in the... in the Smash Brothers... What's wrong with... Oh, Dr. Mario.
Dr. Mario.
Super Dr. Mario, right?
I called Teladoc this week, and I got Dr. Mario, and now I'm I'm stacking my pills like Tetris.
Sweet. I got it right. Wait,
good job.
Is there was never a NES Dr. Mario?
NES? I don't think there's a NES. There was definitely several.
Oh, I take it back. There was. Later. There was an NES was one, and then there was a SNES one as well. Oh, no, maybe I'm thinking of the Game Boy. So another Game Boy Advance game.
It's a Game Boy. I remember the Game Boy version, but I don't remember.
Man, the Advance had so many cool conversions.
Right.
Oh, it's so good. Yeah, Nintendo, the original Nintendo, Nintendo Entertainment System had Dr. Mario.
It was on both. Yeah, it was on the original and this. Yep, you're right. You arcade, this, Game Boy, everywhere.
Yeah, it was all places. And
they had it on the WiiWare.
Well, yeah, they did. WiiWare was a thing. Too bad he spent any money there, because now you'll never play him again. All right, well done, Brian. Well done. Did you see that they just crashed down on Nintendo? Just like laid into a YouTuber that does like music, I guess.
Yeah. Or so he does soundtracks, and he was posting soundtracks to games that aren't available soundtracks, where you can't purchase them anywhere. And so yeah, they brought the smackdown.
I don't know why they do that. Why do they get this? Only would help. This only helps Nintendo. There's no downside to this because no one can buy those soundtracks anyway.
Yeah.
I don't understand.
But, you know, and Nintendo's always kind of taken the vault approach of Disney's. They've always modeled themselves after Disney's. They're like, yeah, what would Disney do? Well, they would put things in the vault and protect the crap out of it, even if you couldn't buy it anywhere.
I'm going to play Dr. Mario.
I don't even think Disney has a vault anymore. I think they open all that stuff up.
Oh, yeah, there's no such thing as a vault anymore. I mean, they may have things they haven't released yet, but this fake idea of the vault, what a bunch of shit that was.
We're putting that in the vault. Get that off YouTube. Yeah. Put it back in the vault.
I'm going to play Dr. Mario later. I'm in the mood now.
I think you should play Dr. Mario later. And I'm going to play 3D. The Advance.
Or I might play Columns 3 on the Genesis, which was a very good Tetris-like. Ooh. Nothing wrong with Columns 3, by the way.
No, nothing wrong with that.
All right. Well done.
That was good. I got a half portion and you got full portion.
I got full portion.
Welcome to the treasure room.
We got an email to read. This came to us at playretroshow@gmail.com. That's playretroshow@gmail.com. This is from KT Data, who's also in the chat today.
Oh,
really like this question. He says, hey guys, what are your preferred arcade buttons? Concave, fat, flat, convex, and joystick. Ball on top versus the bat on top. Do you have any preferences? Mm. Love the show. Keep up the good work. KT Data. Well, Kevin.
Kevin.
To me, it's easy. Ball for the stick and flat for the button if I can get it.
Ball to the ball to ball to stick.
Take concave if I have to. Convex is for weirdos.
I'm going to agree with Scott. Concave my buttons on the arcade machine always. I'll punch a convex person who's wants it on the arcade machine. Anyway.
Yeah.
And then I got to say, I like the bat top. I'm not a big fan of the ball top on the arcade. I feel like I have to hold it daintily. Mm. Like it's, do you feel like that when you do the ball? Or you just like grab it like.
I grab that ball with my fist and I go. Yeah. Just rip it apart. Yeah. I like a ball.
Convex is concave is when it caves in, the button caves in. Convex is when it vexes upward, bubbly, a bubble.
That's how you remember that when you were a kid. Yeah. When they were teaching you about convex versus concave, you had to make up meanings, and concave was always the one where you're like, oh, it caves in. It's like in.
Yeah, caves in, man.
Yeah.
But interesting thing, one more thing about Berserk, one more quick little tidbit. They had some controller issues. And some of the stuff they said about the controller issues, I couldn't tell if they were kidding or not. But they did definitely have some controller issues because they had like 4,000 canceled orders on the first shipment because it was having some trouble. They had originally had a bat-type stick on it, I think, in development. I don't know if that made it out the door, but where they sent out the door was having trouble.
Yeah.
But there was some during the development phase, there was some rumors and some trash talk that it had like a bat type controller, 7 inches long.
7-inch bat.
And, wow. 7-inch bat thing.
Yeah.
I read conflicting reports between it was a problem because people were pulling the machine over on themselves.
Yeah.
It's like, all right. Don't know how much I believe that one.
Yeah.
Also, they said that that it was much more popular with the ladies until they switched to the 1-inch ball. That's what they said. I don't know if I believe it.
Okay.
But that's what they said.
I'm going to go ahead and I like
and
that story.
I know it sounds like I'm making a joke, but I'm telling you, there's interviews with exactly that information.
Yeah, it's when they talk to upstart lawyer Allie McBeal about what her original design was for Berserk.
Right.
Which Brian still can't spell right. All right. Hey, we did it. Look at that. Email done. PlayRetroShow@gmail.com. Thank you, Kevin, for your email. If you have an email you'd like to send to the show, recommend something, thoughts, feelings, we screw something up, we're happy to correct them too. Just send it on over. PlayRetroShow@gmail.com. That's PlayRetroShow@gmail.com. Our next episode discussion is going to be the run and gun genre from Contra to Gunstar Heroes and beyond. Think Metal Slug. I mentioned Contra. Yes. All of these games where you're running and gunning, side-scrolling running gunners, man. And what kind of impact they had. Right now, it's having a huge impact on me. I don't know if you knew this, but it's widely considered in the retro community that the greatest version of Contra ever to be made on consoles is the Genesis version called Contra Hardcores. Or no, Contra Hardcore. But it's Corp, like C-O-R-P.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. I played a bunch of that. It's hard as hell. And it's loud and explosive and rad. And I wish Konami was still making them. But they're not. Anyway, Contra, like I mentioned earlier, not Metal Gear. What am I trying to say?
Metal Slug.
Metal Slug. I always do that. These amazing run and gun shooters that had me hooked when those things came out. We're going to talk about those and, how rad they are. And I think we could even, I don't know, you could probably include things like that. What's the ninja game that, Sega made? Little star chucking guy. What was that called?
Shinobi
1, 2, and 3. Shinobi's basically that. I mean, I don't know. Like Brian and I were having offline discussion or before the show, we were talking about like how often do we want to talk about a full genre versus a single game? And it's kind of hard to talk about one without talking about its impact and then other games that were inspired by it or even sequels or whatever. So we're just playing it by ear. You know, we'll get done with our initial 10 episodes, and by then we'll probably know kind of where we lean. But next week it's we run really and gun,
need,
baby.
We really need feedback. So if there's something that really tickles your fancy and it's like, oh, that really alive that, then tweet to us or send a playretroshow@gmail.com. Yeah. We can't promise we'll make a format change, but we certainly like to hear what you have to say.
Ooh, Satan Slurpee says Broforce. Absolutely. Broforce is came out in 2014 or 2015. So
yes,
that game is 100% inspired by these old run and gun shooters. And that is one of my favorite indie games of all time. So we'll bring that up next week. Hell yeah.
We played that. Me and Scott played that a while.
Played multiplayer time. Forever ago, yeah. But we did. I wouldn't mind playing that again. That game's great. Oh, my gosh.
It was great.
Really good. I wish they would do a follow-up or something because that game was good.
Give it like 2, the enforcing.
Give it like full, Minecraft-level modding capability. Let people just make crazy maps. You can make maps, but just really go nuts with it. Oh, man.
Like I think they should change it to a maze game.
Yeah, maze. It's an amazing game with robots that say things we can't understand. That'd be cool.
Right.
Anyway, that'll be next week here on Play Retro. Now, in the meantime, before we get out of here, I just want to mention that the entire enterprise here that we're trying to get together and make big and make rad, this show, this new show, relatively new baby show that we got going here, is all supported by you guys. So head on over to patreon.com/playretro and toss us a buck or two. There's really great revenue. There's really great rewards is the word I was looking for you if you do that. And part of that is bonus content every week. You get all kinds of cool stuff that we post there and nowhere but there. So go over there, check it out, patreon.com/playretro. And don't forget Play Retro on Twitter as well. Brian, what do you got there? Oh, I forgot to mention this. Daniel sent those. Where's his letter?
Yes, Daniel sent these. The great Daniel sent this. And I'm going to do some video for Daniel and our patron supporters. I'm going to pull it out and check out this arcade classic mini of Rampage, one of my favorite games from the arcade. And so looking forward to talking more about that soon. And sent me some other stuff, some Turtles, tiny arcade stuff. A lot of fun.
Yep,
I can't wait to play with it.
He's a huge nerd in retro, and he sent us a bunch of tiny cabinets. And apparently, it's just a small smidgen of this giant collection he has. He has like every kind of retro thing.
I've seen pictures. Yeah. We didn't even put a dent in that collection.
So, Daniel, huge thanks, man. It's really, really nice of you to even think of us. We appreciate that a lot. So thank you for that. Be like Daniel, be super into retro and send us your feedback, your thoughts, your feelings, your comments, your whatevers. All right. I think that's it. What else did I not mention? Our website, frogpants.com/playretro. Go do that. Brian, anything else you want to add here?
Absolutely. If you can't support us on Patreon, we understand. You're working, folks, but you can tell a friend. So just, if you get a chance, casual conversation. Hey, have you heard that new show called Play Retro? Check it out. Yeah. It's awesome.
I like your sales voice. It's fun. It's fun.
That's right.
Hear.
I got to sell some stuff. This is Business Brian.
It's Business Brian. Look out, guys. It's Business Brian. All right. That's going to do it for us. Thank you all for listening and being here. We'll be back next week with more. We'll see you then.
Information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
ACAST powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
ACAST helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. ACAST.com.